This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiya Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
What this means is they're going to do a review, situation assessment of what's going on, and that will be able to give them an opportunity to make a recommendation to the government. They gave a 90-day review because of the strategic importance of continuing the HIV program in Nigeria. They gave a waiver.
That was the Nigerian public health analyst Ejike Orji welcoming Nigeria's proactive response to the U.S. 90-day pause on foreign development aid. Details coming up also. M23 rebels are fighting to seize Niambabwe, a mining town in DRC's South Kivu province. And the U.S. has given notice that it is stopping funding the UN-backed mission in Haiti tasked with fighting gangs. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Urban life has tentatively resumed under the shadow of ongoing conflict and a deepening humanitarian crisis in the city of Goma in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The residents of Goma are today taking advantage of the ceasefire accord that the M23 rebel group declared yesterday amid a rush to bury some 2,000 victims of last week's battle for the city due to fear disease could spread. Meanwhile, VOA reporter Sabiti Jafar Al-Katanti in Goma tells me fresh fighting is going on in DRC's South Kivu province.
Yeah, the ceasefire was not set up for Goma or neighboring, because in the communique of ceasefire, the M23 announced that by the ceasefire, they won't attack anymore the city of Bukavu, even the airport of Kavumu. So the ceasefire concerns the zone of South Kivu, the province of South Kivu, where, unfortunately, today, now, at this moment, there are fighting between FRDC and M23. And according to the FRDC spokesperson in South Kivu province, M23 attacked them in the city, in the mining city of Niabibwe, which is 80 kilometers northeast of South Kivu, a really rich zone in natural resources.
Talk to us about the rich zone Niabibwe. What kind of resources did you say it had?
Niabibwe is a small city in the territory of Kalehe, but which is a rich city because in Niabibwe, all minerals we found in Rubaya are also in Niabibwe, such as coltan, tourmaline, all the three T's, which are the essential minerals in electronics, the one being used for our laptops, phones, and all the new technology. So Niabibwe is important, a rich city, which can give the M23 more money. So if they succeed to take the control of Niabibwe this time, now they will get two big mineral cities, because they also have some cities, but not as rich as Rubaya and Niabibwe.
So while the M23 are actually fighting in Niabibwe, the citizens of Goma have taken advantage of the ceasefire, and people are rushing to bury some 2,000 victims of last week's battles for the city as they fear the spread of disease.
At this moment, Goma for now is a bit safe than other places where fighting still ongoing, as we are talking about Niabibwe now. People in Niabibwe are facing fighting, while people in Goma are just afraid at home. Activities start opening their doors, shops and markets, even if it's not 100%. But here in Goma, life can start. During this war, there is an announcement of ceasefire. An announcement can come from FRDC or from M23, or can come from another foreign power, such as UN, UE, UK, and NGOs, but ceasefire have never been respected by both of sides of fighting.
Both between Kinshasa and M23.
The other point I can talk is the record of people who were killed during the war. Now people in Goma are afraid by the number of trucks which are taking bodies from morgue to the cemetery, because today is the fourth day of burial and trucks are continuing to bring bodies to the cemetery. And I must announce that for now, since yesterday, media are not allowed to cover the burial, and no one knows how much people have been killed during this war. I talked today to the Catholic bishop who said that he has the record from Morisco, which say about, we talk about 3,000 people, and he's not sure that it's only 3,000. So according to the Catholic bishop, victims may be more than 3,000 people.
That was the reporter Sabiti Jafar Al-Khatanti speaking with me from Goma. The United Nations says the U.S. has given notice that it is halting funding to a U.N.-backed mission in Haiti, tasked with fighting gangs trying to seize full control of the country's capital. The Associated Press reports the U.S. has been the biggest financial contributor to the mission, led by Kenyan police, which was launched last year and is struggling with a lack of funding and personnel. U.S. spokesman Stefan Dujarric said the U.S. halt in funding will have an immediate impact on the mission. The move comes as U.S. President Donald Trump imposes a sweeping freeze on foreign assistance and ordering thousands of U.S. aid agency employees and contractors to be put on leave while the administration evaluates all foreign aid programs to make sure they serve national interests. Nigerian authorities have launched a special multi-ministerial committee to develop a transition and sustainability plan for U.S. aid-funded health programs following U.S. President Donald Trump's 90-day halt on foreign development aid. The committee aims to secure continued financial support for critical health programs. Timothy Abiezu reports from Abuja.
Nigeria's health minister said the committee, comprising officials from the Ministries of Finance, Health and Environment, intends to ensure that patients receiving treatment for HIV, tuberculosis and malaria do not experience setbacks amid the uncertainty of U.S. foreign policy. Shortly after taking office 2 weeks ago, U.S. President Donald Trump ordered a 90-day pause on U.S. foreign aid. But days later, he approved a temporary waiver for life-saving humanitarian assistance covering medicine, medical services, food, and shelter. Despite the exemption, concerns remain over the future of U.S. funding for global health programs. Public health analyst Ejike Oji welcomed Nigeria's proactive response to the U.S. funding freeze.
What this means is they are going to do a review, situation assessment of what's going on. And that will be able to give them opportunity to make a recommendation to the government. They gave a 90-day review because of the strategic importance of continuing the HIV program in Nigeria. They gave a waiver. So that means there's still a possibility at the end of 90 days after their review, they might say, look, we don't want to continue this funding.
Nigeria is a significant recipient of U.S. foreign aid, receiving $1.02 billion in 2023, much of it through agencies like the USAID. USAID funding to Nigeria plays a pivotal role in HIV and AIDS treatment, maternal and child care, and disease prevention efforts. On Monday, the Nigerian Federal Executive Council approved $1 billion for healthcare sector reforms and allocated an additional $3.2 million to procure 150,000 HIV treatment packs over the next 4 months. Authorities said the new funding will support improvements in primary healthcare services, maternal and child healthcare, and training of healthcare professionals. But Ndayo Aiwat, General Secretary of the Health Sector Reforms Coalition, says it will be difficult to sustain those programs without continued U.S. support.
Even when they are releasing the available funds on time and stuff, they will not be able to cover all the areas that those funds were helping them to achieve. So it will take probably 2-3 years.
Approximately 1.8 million Nigerians are living with HIV. The country also accounts for the world's highest number of malaria deaths and ranks among the top countries for tuberculosis cases. Aiwat says Nigeria needs new partnerships for health programs.
That is a multi-sectoral approach. It works on partnerships. There are certain things that we cannot do alone as a country. Going into resource pooling from many partners and stakeholders, it's a recommended approach to financing health activities.
Currently, only about 4% of Nigeria's annual budget is allocated to the health sector, far below the 15% target set by African leaders in the 2001 Abuja Declaration. It's unclear whether the U.S. will reverse its decision after the 90-day pause, but with uncertainty looming, analysts say careful implementation of policies and new partnerships may be Nigeria's best path forward. Timfi Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1-202-258-3076. We'll be sharing our listeners' comments on Africa News Tonight. U.S. President Donald Trump said he wants the U.S. to take ownership of Gaza, moving beyond his earlier statements of forcing Gazans to relocate to neighboring Jordan and Egypt. Trump made the stunning announcement yesterday evening as he hosted Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Widakuswara has this report.
As hundreds of thousands of Gazans return to their demolished homes following the January 19th ceasefire deal between Israel and Hamas, on Tuesday, U.S. President Donald Trump made a stunning announcement.
The U.S. will take over the Gaza Strip, and we will do a job with it too.
Trump went beyond the suggestion he made last month to relocate Gazans to other countries, including Jordan and Egypt. He wants to develop the area into what he calls the Riviera of the Middle East.
Everybody I've spoken to loves the idea of the United States owning that piece of land, developing and creating thousands of jobs with something that will be magnificent in a really magnificent area that nobody would know. Nobody can look because all they see is death and destruction and rubble.
Trump made the announcement as he hosted Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House.
I've said this before, I'll say it again. You are the greatest friend Israel has ever had in the White House.
Trump did not share details on how he plans to exert control over Gaza, an area ravaged by 15 months of war. He did not rule out sending U.S. troops. And it's unclear how occupying Gaza would fit into Trump's own stated goal of expanding the Abraham Accords to include Riyadh. He brokered the deal that normalized ties between Israel and Arab countries in 2020. Saudi Arabia has said it would only agree to recognize Israel if the Gaza war ends and Palestinians have a path to statehood. Mirat Mabruk, senior fellow at the Middle East Institute via Zoom.
Shuffling them out of Palestine into neighboring countries is not a particularly auspicious start. So I think it's going to have quite a pronounced effect. Having said that, we don't know, as with so many things about President Trump. We just have to wait and see.
Trump's announcement on Gaza is his latest signaling of expansionist ambitions, following his statements to acquire Greenland from Denmark, take over the Panama Canal, and absorb Canada. Ahead of his meeting with Netanyahu, Trump also directed the restoration of his maximum pressure campaign on Iran to prevent it from getting a nuclear weapon. He also ended support for the UN agency that helps Palestinian refugees and withdrew the U.S. from the UN Human Rights Council, which he says is anti-Semitic. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News, Washington.
U.S. allies and other nations today have been rejecting President Donald Trump's proposal to take over Gaza, permanently displace Palestinians, and turn the enclave into a Riviera of the Middle East. Among the countries saying that Palestinians should be able to live in Gaza are Britain, Germany, Russia, and Egypt. Several governments said that the world should work towards a two-state solution with a nation for Palestinians and a nation for Israel. Khalil Jahassahan, president of the Arab Center in Washington, discussed the reaction with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shenawi.
The reaction in the Middle East is quite similar to actually the reaction worldwide. They viewed the statements by the president of the United States as a total departure from U.S. policy for decades. And essentially, they interpreted his step with regards to the population of Gaza as a form of ethnic cleansing in violation of international law. They did not agree with it. They kind of warned against it, particularly Arab countries that seem to be most directly affected by what has taken place, especially when Trump seemed to basically speak on behalf of countries like Jordan, like Egypt, like Saudi Arabia. They felt compelled to clarify their position. I'm not sure their reaction has been registered fully and meaningfully with the administration. Trump continues to insist that what he hears is irrelevant in terms of their reaction and refusal to participate in this, that they will change their mind eventually and they will listen to it.
What do you make of the European allies' reaction?
They are stating it the way it is. These are not countries critical or antagonistic of the United States. They are allies. They are the closest allies of the United States. But apparently, there is a clear differentiation between these allies from Germany to the UK to France to name it. These countries apparently have a lot more respect for international law. The U.S. has in the past, even in the previous administration, they differed on Gaza. They differed on Palestine policy with some European allies, but at least they did not negate international law. This one is outright negation and violation of international law. That's putting essentially the Western world on the spot.
That was Khalil Jahassahan, president of the Arab Center in Washington, speaking with my colleague Mohammed Al-Shenawi.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
More than 400 civilians rendered jobless by the departure of French troops from Chad are asking the government to hire them and provide the job benefits they had when they worked for the French. The last French troops left Chad on January the 31st, following an order by President Mahamat Idriss Deby Itno. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from neighboring Cameroon.
Chadian officials say hundreds of civilians who were employed by the French assembled in the capital N'Djamena on Monday to ask the government to immediately give them jobs. French forces departed Chad at the order of the Central African States President, Field Marshal Mahamat Idriss Deby. The last French troops left the country on Friday after handing over the Kosei military base in N'Djamena, which they had occupied for about 70 years. Earlier, French forces handed over two other bases at Faya-Lajo and Abéché. Mbaye Toubam Bruno is the spokesperson for civilians who worked at the French military base. he spoke to VOA from N'Djamena via a messaging app.
Le licenciement que nous avons subi, qualifié de licenciement économique par l'inspection du travail.
He says Chad's government should immediately recruit them because at least half of the over 400 Chadians who lost their jobs as French troops departed are already in precarious situations that do not permit them to support their families. Maitubam says it is imperative for Chad's government to guarantee the security and social well-being of all former workers at French military bases by making sure each and every one of them has a job. The former workers mostly held jobs in hospitals, schools, and dining facilities that served the French troops. Others provided humanitarian assistance to those who lived around the bases. Maitubam said a majority of the workers were asked to leave French military bases on November 28 when Chad announced an end to military cooperation with France. The workers say they have remained without jobs and salaries and cannot take care of their medical bills. Aziz Muhammad Saleh is a member of a Chadian commission overseeing the dismantling of military agreements between Paris and N'Djamena. He is also Chad's former communications minister and government spokesperson. He says Chad's president, Field Marshal Mohamed Idriss Déby, ordered the commission to make a census of all civilians who worked with French troops in the three bases of Kosei, Faya-Lajeaux and Abéché. He says after the census, the commission will propose a list of workers whose services are needed to the government of Chad for recruitment. Mohamed spoke on Chad's state TV. He said Déby has asked health and humanitarian workers to continue working in hospitals formerly controlled by French troops. He said he was pleading with the former workers to have confidence in their government, which he said is doing everything possible to protect their rights and provide jobs despite the difficult economic situation the country is facing. The workers said that under the French, they earned an average salary of more than $130 per month. Before leaving Chad last week, General Pascal Yanni, the commander of French forces in Africa, told Chadian State TV that their departure was abrupt. Paris has not said anything concerning the former workers, Chad's government says. The workers say the decision to order out the French may have been patriotic for the government, but that it undermined their well-being and did not take into consideration the needs of several thousand civilians who had health care and education thanks to the French troops' presence. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbil Yabaro, and our engineer, Helen Cordian, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays.